episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
Hi, and I'm Bill Cundiff.
Sing it for us, Bill.
Hey, we got a sponsor this
that's
hour.
That's not singing, that's talking. Are you a rapper?
No.
Oh.
No, I can't rap. Our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake, and they've got everything you can imagine when it comes to John Deere. If you want a tractor or a mower or implements, you need parts or service, they do it all up there. Go up and see them. And their phone number,
530-226-9226.
Very good.
I know. So the repetition's working for me.
Yeah, is it working?
I hope it's working for everybody else, too.
Yeah, go up and see them. They're there and ready to serve you. So,
yes.
What's going on today?
Well, let's see. Free advertisement of the day goes out again to Nicolet Glass because they are the greatest. And they are bringing me some spectacular screens on Monday to block the sun.
Yeah.
Yeah, for the front of the house. Our kitchen will no longer be 800
See,
degrees
I'm
by
glad
930.
I'm glad you're doing that because as soon as they get them on, the temperature's going to probably drop down to like mid-80s, high 70s.
No, they're coming on Monday.
And we won't need
them. No, it's still August. They said 4 to 6 weeks. I knew it wouldn't be. They're never 4 to 6 weeks. That's just silly. So, anyway, I will for sure this week, because I forgot last week, but I will for sure look up their info and have it ready when we come back again. And
so, yeah, everybody knows who Nicolet Glass is. They've been around
a long
time.
If you live in Reading and you don't know who they are, then you're silly.
You never broke a window.
They have great techs, and they do all sorts of stuff. They'll come out and look and help you figure out solutions. They're really nice. So today we're talking about the Center for Missing and Exploited Children. It's NCMEC. Is that how you say it?
It is.
Is it NCMEC? All right. First time I heard that, I was like, the what? So then I started chatting with our guest here, Paul Skinner, and I was like, what? No one knows about this. Well, I mean, maybe they do. I didn't know about it. So I figure if I don't know about it, there's got to be some other people. So our guest, Paul Skinner, he is a member of Team ATOM, which is the Investigative Resource Provision Unit of the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, NCMEC. We'll be saying that a lot today. So, you know, when we say that, then you'll know what it means. He has professional experience of 4 decades. So he's old like we are, which is awesome.
Yes.
Because age and treachery always overcomes youth and skill. We know that, right? He's been working in municipal policing, working in the criminal justice system, and then the prosecution of offenders. Yay. Paul is a graduate of the FBI National Academy, where he majored in the management of cold case investigations. That's what kind of got me before, too. He has experience as an adjunct professor for Humphreys University, teaching criminal justice students in advanced and complicated investigations. As a member of Team ATOM, Paul brings experience and expertise in the areas of cold case investigations, spatial behavior of offenders, I want more on that, and the prosecution of no-body homicide cases. Those are the ones that, are there a lot of people who are good at that? That seems like that'd be kind of a specialized space.
It is a specialized space. Fortunately, that's a space that's growing, especially in the area of prosecutors getting skilled up on how to present those cases to a jury.
When you don't have a body. Wow. I would imagine, well, Investigation Discovery runs 24/7 with murder shows. I think there's a couple channels, actually. So I don't think there's any shortage of people doing bad things to other people.
No, unfortunately.
Yeah, that seems to be a pretty consistent, you know, throughout human history. Is your specialty children now that you're working with NCMEC? Or, when you were regular, you know, in the police area, it was just anything, whatever cases came through your division.
That's true. It was anything. Fortunately, though, most of my career was spent in investigations.
Nice.
And during that time, I was in the East Bay area of San Francisco. And we had a series of child abductions that, despite our best efforts, we could not solve. We had about 8 girls disappear, no information on them. was developed. At one point, we had a suspect list that would could be volumes. Everything from people wanting to report their ex-husband as a possible suspect to somebody reporting the astronaut John Glenn as a possible suspect. So we spent a lot of time chasing leads that didn't really go anywhere. Those cases are still active on those cases.
Wow.
And the investigators that worked on those cases are still active in getting together and discussing things that have changed in the criminal justice system since then, mostly technology, and looking backwards at those cases as to what can be done on those things.
One thing I notice, and you probably know this, but the advancements in DNA is cracking a lot of cases now, isn't it?
It is, and specifically mitochondrial DNA, where we're getting sources of DNA and then tracing back to the maternal mother. The other thing that's has been an absolute gold mine for cold case investigators is the proliferation of outside organizations like 23andMe or DNA Family History. So we're solving cases now based on close DNA matches with somebody who is close to the offender. And now we have that person identified. Let's take a look at who's within their family circle.
Right, right.
Isn't that how they found the Golden State Killer?
That's exactly how they found the Golden State Killer. That was Paul Holes from the Contra Costa County Crime Lab that came up with that concept and started tracing it backwards, and that's where he was able to identify the suspect on that case. And he was actually offended in the city where I worked. And we were despondent at times because we knew we had a viable suspect. We knew it was a suspect known as an East Area Rapist. We had no idea who this person was. None.
Wow. Hiding right in plain sight, as they
apparently he was. Say. He was within, and we'll talk about that when it comes to spatial relationships. But he was within a half mile of the site each time it occurred. In our city, so
no kidding.
It gets down to basics.
Yeah,
but your question's a great question. Now with mitochondrial DNA, touch DNA, and MVAC, we may talk about that a little bit later.
Yeah, and I find it amazing that on a lot of these cases, they could be 20 years old and or older, and they still have the evidence file, and they can still go back and get DNA off some of that evidence.
It is amazing to me, and with this position I have with NCMEC, I talk with investigators who weren't even born when we're talking about a particular case, and yet I'm so impressed because they are up to speed. They know who all the involved parties are. They've done background checks on people and refreshed all their information before I ever talked to them.
Wow. Yeah, that's the whole technology field is and now they're doing this AI technology, and every day you're hearing something new with that, how they're getting involved with a lot of stuff and cracking cases too. So
it's true.
It's pretty amazing.
All right. So you provided us with this handy list.
I did.
We don't typically work from a list, but you know what? A list is probably good for us so we don't rabbit trail the heck out of it and then go, oh my God, look at the time. Okay. So talk to us about national, missing, I always get it wrong, the NCMEC thing. What is it? National Center for Missing and Exploited Children.
Exploited Children, yes.
I can't say it when I'm looking at someone. I have to close my eyes.
Okay. In 1981, a young man by the name of Adam Walsh was abducted from a shopping mall in Florida. And you may know his father, John Walsh, who was the creator of America's Most Wanted.
Yeah.
John and Reeve Walsh... In spite of all their sorrow, in spite of their family being destroyed, took a look at law enforcement's response and realized that law enforcement did not have a coordinated response that extended over jurisdictional boundaries, and that there are budgetary considerations that an agency has to consider when investigating a long-term case. And so their concern was there should be a better way to track this. There should be a national database of missing children. We should be looking at how to coordinate between law enforcement organizations. And keep in mind, the average staffing of a law enforcement organization in the U.S. is 25 or less. So when you have a major case and you're operating an organization of 22 people 24/7,
Yeah.
It doesn't take long before you're overwhelmed and you're without resources.
Yeah.
Well, and it's not like everything else stops.
It's not like everything else stops.
You still have all the regular stuff going on.
You still have all the calls for service coming in. And so what John and Reeve did is they came to President Reagan and they asked for a bill. And in 1984, we had the Missing Children Assistance Act that was signed by President Reagan. And both John and Reeve were there to witness that signing, which was a great event to occur. And as a result, here we are. We have the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. It's a nationwide organization, and we also extend our services outside of the country, especially during times of disaster. We're a nonprofit, non-governmental organization, but we're congressionally funded. That's kind of a unique.
That is unique.
A unique situation. And we have numerous programs that are directed towards finding and returning missing children and finding and prosecuting those people that exploit our children. Hmm. And I'm in one piece of that organization, which is Team Adam. And we are all retired people that come from varied backgrounds. We have retired anthropologists, retired forensic odontologists. We have psychiatrists. We have people from Secret Service, FBI, highway patrols from every state, local police organizations, CIA. We are a very, very diverse group of people.
And you're not in a... It's not like you're in an office, a local office. I mean, my guess is you're all over the country and you work basically in conjunction with each other, but remotely?
Exactly. Okay. We are spread all over. Our offices are in Arlington, Virginia.
Oh.
And so we have the bulk of the full-time personnel work out of Arlington. The rest of us that are a part of Team Adam, we're geographically spread out. And we have both a footprint that we respond to critical cases for, and then we have a mode where something big happens and we need more people. And we'll do that. And then we also have segments within my group, within Team Adam, that will look at old cold cases based on law enforcement's request, or work with local agencies on children who are missing that we suspect are being exploited.
So my guess is you run the gamut from the cold case to the kid who went missing yesterday?
Yes.
Okay. So it isn't just all... you know, the ship has sailed. I mean, some of these kids are potentially found.
Most of them are.
Nice.
So we, in 2022, of those children that reported missing to NCMEC by law enforcement, we recovered over 90% of them.
Wow.
Now, I'm not saying that we did. I'm saying we,
but
in conjunction with law
enforcement. Kind of part of it. Sure.
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a tool in the toolbox for overwhelmed. I mean, you got, look at some of like our sheriff's offices and stuff, like in Northern California. If you just look at that, I mean, they're way under a dozen people.
I'm so glad to use the term overwhelmed because all of us in Team Adam had those cases and still have them in our heads and wish we had the resources that we're now providing to local law enforcement.
That makes sense.
Without charge. So it's a great tool for local law enforcement. We do not get involved in cases that we're not invited in on.
Oh.
So local law enforcement.
You don't get to go peruse the...
No.
They call you or whatever, and you become deployed.
Yes.
You know, it's interesting because there are so many, we were kind of laughing, earlier that, it's the federal government and, they mess up everything. But it's like, hey, here's something your tax dollars are doing that's actually a good thing.
It sounds like
a really efficient thing as well.
It is, and I've been part of the organization for 2 years now, and I am constantly impressed with the amount of dedication that our people have and the amount of resources that we can provide to a local agency that is they're up against the wall.
Well, who has access to a CIA guy and an FBI guy and a former homicide investigator and, and you can pull people from that geography who know that geography really well because maybe like you, they spent, 30 years or 40 years there. And here you have a guy that's been there five.
And exactly. And when I,
sometimes time is your.
Yeah. And so when I look at my roster of fellow members of Team Adam, my roster is divided into half. One half is their name and the state and their location. The second half is their area of expertise. So, for an example, on a deployment, I really wanted to know how historical can, how far back can we go on a search of property for human remains? So I went to my roster and went down to my search expert, called my search expert, and we got that question answered within 10 minutes.
Wow.
That's impressive.
It was neat. It was really cool.
Very few things we can get done in 10 minutes. Yes. couldn't get any. Never mind. Made a call the other day to something that was really easy. I couldn't get that done in 10 minutes. I can't even kill grasshoppers in 10 minutes. Spent sure. a lot of time on that last week, too. Got to take a quick break. We will be right back with our guest, Paul Skinner. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
I'm going to do doing bad things to you.
People think I'm crazy, cause I worry all the time. If you paid attention, you'd be worried too. You better pay attention, or this world you love so much might just kill you. I could be wrong now, but I don't think so. Cause there's a jungle out there. There's a jungle out there. It's a jungle out there.
Theme song from our favorite detective, Monk. Yeah, favorite it. Fake detective.
Love it.
I found that in my travels. I thought, oh, Paul will like that one.
Yes, I do.
Okay, so what else do you guys do? We were breaking our own rule. We were talking during the break. We never talk during the break because then we learn stuff and we don't tell the rest of the people out there listening. But you were saying there's other stuff that you guys do beyond Team Adam, of course.
Yeah, I think it's important to understand our mission. Our mission is to find missing children. Associated with that is to reduce the child sexual exploitation that is discovered, and to also prevent future victimization. So my team mostly concentrates on the missing children and the sexual exploitation issue. We have other teams that are also support mechanisms for us. And then we have a separate team that deals with future victimization through programs that occur. And I'll tell you a program that you've probably seen, but you may not be aware of. How many times have you walked into a store and looked to your right and see a small blue sticker that says Code Adam on it?
Mm. I'll go look later.
Okay. If you see that sticker, it's one of our participating retailers.
Oh, okay.
That if a child is reported missing, a mother comes up or a guardian comes up and says, my child is missing.
Like in the store.
In the store. Uh-huh. They have a protocol. They follow that protocol as instructed by NCMEC. They lock down that facility. They put a store employee at the front door and the back door. Nobody comes in. Nobody goes out.
So you guys have already kind of gotten them up to speed. They have a plan.
It's amazing. And we have so many retail participants. Mm-hmm. And locally in the Reading area, one of our biggest participants is Old Navy. And Old Navy, you'll see our brochures there.
I mean, I know this is sort of going out at the backwards, but
no.
I'm sure they contact you. And would like that help, but if you guys go to a retailer and say, hey, you know, do you want to be part of this system? Does anyone ever say no?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that would be kind of crazy.
I don't think so. When you're dealing with children, there's a lot of
that should all be yes.
A lot of cooperation. Yes,
yeah, you would think
from all forms of business.
So if there are people out there who own a business, work at a business, and they're like, hey, wait a minute, do we have that? And they go look, and they don't.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best way for them to get with the program?
Probably the best way is go on missingkids.org, which is the main NCMEC website.
That's easy.
And, yes.
Missing Kids, and it's not with a Z or anything stupid like that. You spelled it correctly.
It's not
missing
with a Z.
Kids. I hate that.
Yes.
They do that. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we were talking briefly at break. The organization that I work for has many different sections, and we'll be talking about some of those in a few minutes. But one that I really want to highlight is that we have a group that does nothing but investigate the public records domain. So if we come up with some information that we have no idea who this person is or what's going on, our law enforcement calls us and says, hey, we need some help. We're looking for Tupelo Teddy. We have the capacity with our analytical group to run their records to find out who's used that moniker in the past.
Ah.
Yeah, because I would imagine there's probably rules in place that don't allow you just to go investigate people without their permission, right? I mean,
well, if somebody is a suspect on a case, we don't need permission from them,
right?
Especially involving a child. But if information comes up and we need a deep dive as far as public records go, then we have a section that provides that information for us.
How many? One of our listeners asked, how many of these kids do you find are taken by parents, and is that really classified as a kidnapping?
So
non-custodial.
So we talk about non-custodial. That's about 5% of our caseload is non-custodial parents, where one parent is upset over something. You know, you can fill in the blank.
Yeah.
And decides to take the child away from the other parent, either in violation of a court order or with a court order. So it's about 5% of our total caseload. Most of our caseload involves the runaway endangered child.
And the kid actually did run away on purpose? Got snatched?
Most of our caseload involves kids who just decide to run away.
Okay.
But the problem is, remember this, and this is something I want your listeners to really concentrate on, is that upon checking on our runaways from 2022, we found that 1 in 6 were involved with some type of sexual exploitation issue.
Once they ran away, they ended up getting involved.
Once they run away.
Yeah.
Because they're either running from something or they're running to something.
Right.
And with social media as it is, these predators are finding kids on social media and promising them all types of things to meet up with or to socialize with or to work for.
Right.
And with the
you're scowling here.
Yes, I know. I saw Sound of Freedom twice same week, was an amazing movie, and I was glad I saw it twice. But that's why I was really focused on getting this program out there, because I thought this is very much on people's minds now. You know, that is a real thing, despite the media's best efforts to tell everyone it was. What was it? It was a. Wasn't it a right-wing QAnon plot or something?
QAnon, yeah.
I mean, it's like, what?
You're kidding.
No, they actually said that. That was big on, you know, MSLSD and all of them. They were all talking about how it was a rumor, you know. This wasn't a real thing.
Like, yeah, the numbers weren't right, and there weren't really
that
many
kids
that
went
missing.
And there weren't that many kids, in sex slavery and all that. So you're the expert. When you watched that movie and you saw the stats, were you going, or were you going, oh, that's silly?
No, they're
totally right.
The stats are completely right. Yeah, let me give you an idea of how NCMEC works. There's a call center that law enforcement will call, our parents will call. We average 400 calls a day. So this is a 24-hour-a-day operation.
Wow.
Everything from detectives calling saying, hey, I need some help with a 10-year-old case, to investigators calling saying, I need some help with one that just jumped off, to parents calling saying, I don't know what to do. I've reported the child missing to law enforcement. How do I help? And as soon as that call is reported, or if there's even tips, it goes right to a case manager, and the case manager takes a look at the information that's provided, and then will reach out to one of us from Team Adam to say, call this law enforcement organization. Call this detective, call this parent if necessary, to form that liaison as quickly as possible. So we have, we like to say that our motto is you call, we haul. It's probably not such a good motto, but in truth, that's exactly
what happens. Exactly. Yeah, sure.
That's what happens. And a lot of it's based on the age of the case, the information that's provided, the location. So as a good example, there was a case called the Rodney case where a young lady disappeared from South Lake Tahoe last year.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I was the nearest NCMEC representative, and I was told be on the road within the hour. So when I got to the command post was extremely well organized, and they had everything going on that they needed. I had my list of resources that I could help provide them, and they had already gained those resources through other means. So I was more of an observer than anything else. That case, unfortunately, wound up with the discovery of her body at the bottom of the lake. But that case initiated by a call to the call center. And then the call center reached out, and we were assigned for deployment.
So you do a lot of actual in-field interviews and work, or is most of it done online and on the phone?
I'd say probably 80% of my work is virtual work, where I'm either on FaceTime or on the phone or exchanging emails with investigators from other organizations. 20% would be deployments.
Hmm. So when you, like when they tell you to go there, do they always send someone or is at the time, do you interview people and is that part of your, I guess it depends on the case.
No, it doesn't depend on the case. Oh. I don't interview anybody.
You don't?
Except for law enforcement. I come into law enforcement and say, I'm from NCMEC. These are the resources that we have available to you. And we'll set in other briefings and we'll keep track. And if I see something starting to kick off, like a long-term search, we'll start moving that direction with the resources.
But you don't talk to the parents. You don't get involved at that level. That's always whatever's happening on that particular scene.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so how much of a departure is that from what you, before you were the interview of the parents, right?
It's really hard. It's extremely hard.
Let me in there. I got questions.
I want to be in the middle of it. Yeah. I'll be sitting in a briefing and somebody will say something. I'll be thinking, wait a minute.
Did you ask them this?
Then I have to hold myself back and say, okay, these are the resources that we have available for you.
Yeah, that's tricky.
Yeah, it is.
That's gotta be hard.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like, I don't know. I feel like you're a chef, but you've got to teach other people over the internet. You know?
Yeah.
No, you're mixing it wrong.
I will tell you, one of the greatest things about this job is I deal with highly functional, dedicated investigators that are pulling their ever-living hair out because they've hit a wall. And sometimes I can help them because I can give them resources that they hadn't thought about.
Mm-hmm.
Other times I can listen to them and say,
been there?
Yep, been there, done that. And yeah, you're up against the wall, and you may have to go with this case unsolved for a while, which police people do not do well with at all.
That's got to be one of the hardest things. You're hot on a case, and all of a sudden you just run out of leads, and you just got nowhere to go.
Yes. I run into retired investigators all the time, and all they want to talk about is that one.
The one that got away? Literally.
Yeah, that one case or those several cases.
It never leaves you.
No, it never does.
When we were kids, nobody talked about kids getting abducted.
That's true.
I mean, you know, we had to come home when the streetlights came on, that kind of stuff. Don't take candy from strangers. We did have an ice cream man, so we did run to the white truck with money when we heard the song. So that was probably bad training. It seems like people are much more vigilant with their kids sometimes to the detriment of children. I mean, they have no freedom to make choices and make decisions. So sometimes they grow up and make bad choices when they get behind the wheel of your car. Is it getting better or is it just different?
I think it's different. We used to have cases when I first got involved in law enforcement in 1973 where we would have the flasher. The occasional rape suspect, those types of things, which are terrible, terrible crimes to put on children. But now we seem to hear a lot about it, and I don't know if that's because of the proliferation of social media.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of curious about.
Or the news cycle.
We have stations dedicated to this, like, you know, the forensic thing. The forensic files, they never run out of episodes. I mean, they're running. I don't know if they're running 24/7, but I think they're running 24/7. So that stuff never seems, and I realize with history, the volume gets bigger, but it seems like it's everywhere. Is it everywhere?
It is, unfortunately.
And it's little towns, big towns.
Yes.
It's not, it used to be kind of a city thing. Now that's not so much a distinction, is it?
No, it's not.
Yeah.
It's all offender based. So wherever the offender decides to base himself,
that's
usually the base of operations.
Do you think like a little town, you'd think it'd be easier to catch them or not?
Usually is.
Is it?
Think about a little town.
Well, yeah, that's
how many people know your business?
Everybody.
Hopefully everybody, yeah.
Exactly.
That's kind of what I was thinking. It might be easier to catch them there in a big city, disappear. So how much of this, like from the movie Sound of Freedom, so kids being taken from one place, moved to another place, you know, the appearance being changed, all those kinds of things, that's got to be pretty common? Is that?
Unfortunately, it is.
That's got to be kind of the MO, right?
It is. It is.
How many of them are taken out of the country? How many kids kidnapped in this country are taken elsewhere?
We have no idea. None.
Because if you didn't find them, I guess you don't know where they went.
No. Anecdotally, we could say put a percentage to those missing children that had never been recovered, but we don't know. We have missing children from Shasta County that have never been recovered. And are they out of country? Don't know. Are they out of state?
Don't know.
Don't know. I mean, the reality is we just don't know.
As far as like, organizations that move children around, I would imagine that's a major focus. Because if you can stop the pipeline, obviously it's a lot harder. It's a lot harder for Billy Bob the moron to snatch Susie from her walk home from school and then somehow manage this elaborate plot. I mean, it'd be easier if they had a big network.
They do. They have big networks. The ones that we're coming across, at least in Northern California, have all been single-person networks.
Really?
And they'll advertise periodically with other people of like mind that I have somebody available for
Stop
you.
Stop it.
But they don't. I haven't heard of anybody in my conversations with the investigators and cases that we've worked on the last couple of years. I haven't heard of a large group.
Really?
Yeah.
It is just like some weird...
It's a commodity.
Creep who's selling children.
Yes.
Wow. And I would imagine the age range is pretty wide.
You name it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Just depends. More girls than boys?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Statistically, more girls than boys.
And what about on the offender's side? Are they predominantly male, female?
Very predominantly male.
Mm-hmm.
When we have a female offender, it's news.
Oh.
Really. It comes across the airwaves real quickly.
Well, because in Sound of Freedom, it was that lady who was like luring the kids away.
It was.
That's what I wondered. But that was a big network. She wasn't the
right.
She wasn't the whole thing. She was just part of the puzzle.
Yeah.
God.
She was the moneymaker.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys work with people in other countries?
We do. We do. We interact with law enforcement in other countries. We actually go to other countries too when there's a disaster.
Oh.
And children are involved or they suspect that they've lost children, we'll have a response team of NetMec Team Adam.
Because I would imagine, you have a big disaster like that. That's a great time to grab up a bunch of kids.
We were deployed to Puerto Rico when they had the hurricane down there. And we had people on the ground there to work with the FBI and State Department.
Make sure they're not
down there.
Not walking away with everybody's kids in the chaos.
Chaos is the right word.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, you get a little chaos going, and it's like, oh, hey, swoop in.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the perfect song for that. All right. So I've got to take a quick break. We'll be back with our guest, Paul Skinner. He is with NECMEC, and we're talking about missing and exploited children. Information and resources for you, and you can find it all at wethepeopleradio.us. This is Cindy at Lauk's Landscape Supply, located at the intersection of Dersch, Turn Creek, and Airport Road. We are your one-stop shop for everything in your yard. We have all the small rental equipment, like the stand-on mini skid steers to get you through those walk-through gates, or Beretto trenchers on tracks are quick and easy to operate, and the popular vibroplates for compaction of pathways or prepping for under artificial turf. Make your job easy with the powered wheelbarrow on tracks. And of course, we have all the products to make your yard the envy of the neighborhood, including all the soils, sands, grass,
gravel, sod, pavers, retaining wall blocks, and multiple size trucks to deliver with no minimum, making your delivery the most cost-effective way to get your job done. So whatever your project, big or small, come check out Lauk's Landscape Supply at the intersection of Dersh, Churn Creek, and Airport Road. Find us on the web at laukslandscapesupply.com or give us a call at 530-378-2220. Lauk's Landscape Supply, where we take pride in your project.
Every day, your life is filled with choices. And when a health crisis happens, you need to be prepared to choose the best healthcare partner. That's when Shasta Regional Medical Center is there to answer the call above the rest. Ranked best in Reading and in the nation for patient safety and clinical excellence, you can be confident that when you choose Shasta, you are choosing superior care, safety, and excellence for you and your family. Choose Shasta at ShastaRegional.com.
She's got a smile that it seems to me reminds me of childhood memories, where everything was as fresh as the bright blue sky. Now and then when I see her face, she takes me away to that special place, and if I stare too long, I'd probably
And on the break, Paul was showing us a picture. Okay, so facial recognition is something you guys, like reconstruction, I mean, something that you guys do. Or you have people who do that.
It is. We have a team that does that. And
that's like the most amazing thing.
I'm telling you,
there's like a lot of amazing things, but that's really amazing.
These people are so talented and... the work product that they put out for investigators is just gold, because the investigator's dealing with what is found,
yeah,
trying to figure out who it is and what happened to that poor child. And so to put those pieces together, we need to know who that child is. And our reconstructionists will do that, again, at no cost to local law enforcement.
That's got to be a massive help.
Oh, it's so awesome. And then that information gets sent back to the detective, and the detective now has that one piece that he or she didn't have before. So that all those pieces together leads to the successful conclusion, hopefully.
Well, like in that one, the picture that the reconstruction person came up with.
Yes.
Then when you figured out who the child was, the side by side of the actual child.
Pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And this is very common of work that they do.
Bone structure and all those kinds of things.
They do it based on bone structure. They take x-rays. They do MRIs. They do all this research work before they start putting together what that person looked like in life.
I think we've all seen like one of those shows. It's funny. We just saw one the other day.
Yeah, we just saw one the other day.
Where they made the clay, the clay model of the girl. And it was a fictional program, that one was, but I know that there are people who can do that. So do those people have to, I'm just curious on the process, do they have to go there and see everything, or can they just be sent all the data and can they do it from that?
They're sent the data.
Wow.
And they do. I know. It's just, to me, it's amazing. And if that's not amazing enough, every 5 years on Jane Doe's, John Doe's.
Oh, they age them.
Or missing children who we've been able to identify, they will age progress them. And that information will be sent back to law enforcement again. And law enforcement can make the decision whether or not they publish that information or not. Obviously, there's reasons not to. If you're working that case and you have something.
Why would you not do it? What are.
You may not want people involved in that case to know that case has risen back up. To the top of your attention.
Right.
And then there's times where you may want to put that information out. But if you do, it's like everything else, then you have to be prepared for the onslaught of calls.
Oh, I forgot about that part.
Because once you identify that person, now you got something to go on, because you can start looking at the people that are close to them, and you can start developing leads. But if you don't know who that person is, you've got nowhere to really go, do you?
No, you're kind of stuck. You can go through the records, and of course we are the clearinghouse for records of missing and exploited children, so you can go through our records, which is very easy because we do that work for the investigator. But you still need to identify that poor child, that poor victim.
Mm-hmm.
Along with that group, we have a biometric technical group that deals with the collection of DNA, dental records, and fingerprint records. And so as an example, I was called recently and asked on a 2005 case if I would obtain mitochondrial DNA from the mother of this child that's been missing since 2005. Well, it's been a while since 2005.
Mm-hmm.
So in my research, I find out the mother's deceased. But we really want mitochondrial DNA. We want the source DNA is what we really want. So we're faced with an option. Do we go to the family and say, will you sign a permission for exhumation?
Right, that's tough.
Which is tacky at best and mm-hmm. tough. But we found out that, I think I was sharing with Aaron earlier, we found out in the state of California that since 1967, every child that's been born, there's been a blood sample taken from the child's heel of their foot to test for some other type of issue. Those are all retained. So when we found out those were retained, we determined that we could have access to those, and we were able to get the child's actual child's DNA, and now that's placed in a databank so that if remains are located at some point,
right,
we can at least identify those remains.
Yeah, because that's the tough thing. I mean, you could get DNA, but if there's nothing to match it to,
it's... Well, that's what we had with the Golden State Killer, who was known as the East Area Rapist before. We had DNA. Every agency where he was involved, we had DNA. But we had no idea who that person was.
Yeah, couldn't match it to anybody.
It's kind of like fingerprints. The old days when we had fingerprints, we go, woo, we got fingerprints. As a new officer, I'd be all excited, and the detectives would go, yeah, okay, cowboy. Yeah. Who do we compare them to?
Right.
You know, the entire population of California?
Yeah, right.
No.
Yeah, but this mitochondrial thing, I mean, it's really cracking some stuff open because you don't need to know. With the DNA sample, you don't need to know exactly who that person is. You can backtrack it, kind of reconstruct it, and narrow it down to a select few.
Well, you have the match on the DNA either through one of the commercial establishments. So you have a familiar match, a family match. And then you look at the family and say, okay, what do we know? Well, we know that the offender was a male, so we exclude all females.
Right.
We know the offender at the time was in his mid-20s, and it's been 20 years since then, so we exclude everybody that's outside of that age parameter. And guess what?
Yeah, who lived in the area?
We get down,
to a few. Yeah, you can narrow it down.
Yeah.
How many of the DNA companies out there, like 23andMe and so forth, are they all offering their data? Databanks to you, or some of them still saying, hey, that's private, we're not going to share it?
Probably the best way to answer that question is usually that information is requested with a search warrant or a subpoena.
Oh, okay.
So whatever their policy is, the search warrant or subpoena supersedes their policy.
Okay. All right.
God. Well, with this, you guys are constantly adding people to the, like, NCMEC roles?
We are.
I'm guessing.
We are.
That's kind of nice. And I would imagine, as somebody who has a ton of experience over the years, because, like, how much, everybody's retired, so I would imagine if you're on a case, you work more. If you're consulting on something, maybe less, but... Is it a time commitment you can control, or does it eat your lunch like it did when you were actually on the job?
That is the true beauty of this. I retired and was not ready to retire. I have done all types of things post-retirement. This by far is the best. Mm. I can pick it up. I can put it down based on my caseload and deployments. And if I get a call to deploy on a certain situation and I can't make it for whatever reason, no harm, no foul. They go to the next nearest person.
Right.
So I tell people I finally found the job I've been looking for the past 45 years.
But you wouldn't have had the experience. You couldn't have done it, which is sort of funny.
Exactly. And I work with the most talented people you could ever imagine and the most giving people. There is no professional hoarding of information.
Right.
Amongst our team members. And there is an overall feeling of, We will do anything for you that you need. I have a counterpart in Bakersfield. Every time I get deployed, he calls me up and goes, dude, I'll be there in 6 hours.
Oh.
And whether I need him or not, he's willing to do that.
Are any of these people folks that you worked with back when you were working, or are they all new?
None of them.
No kidding?
None of them are.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, so it's a whole new friend set. It's just amazing. And I'll share with you one quick story. I was deployed.
No, we want a lot of stories.
Okay. I was deployed to Klamath Falls last year on several missing persons cases and deployed with two other people from Team Adam. I had no idea who they were. I knew their names. I could see their area of expertise on the roster. As you can imagine, I was a little bit nervous. I was kind of the new guy compared to those two. And I get there and I meet these two and oh my God. One guy who's been a homicide investigator for 25 years, very thorough, very meticulous. The other team, Adam, a person was an expert on polygraphs, and she could read a polygraph chart and watch a videotape and have 50 questions at the end of the video as to why this wasn't asked or next time we need to ask these questions. Hmm. And I know I must have looked stupid because I was sitting there just going, oh, my God, I am out of my class here. These people are amazing. Yeah. And I'm finding that system-wide.
Right.
That's
right.
Really awesome because a lot of times, you know, I mean, we're not seeing that in every facet of, you know, government.
Yeah.
Just, you know, when you get to that. And I think sometimes with especially children, people want, like, I brought this up the other night. I was at a meeting and I brought up that we were going to be talking about this. And someone said, well, yeah, I mean, it just depends. I mean, are they actually in on it or are they really looking for these kids? And I didn't throat punch the guy, but I will give you his name. And I thought, really? I mean, how cynical have people gotten? I think pretty cynical.
Yeah. You know, I was talking with a lieutenant from local sheriff's department the other day and we were laughing about the complaints that I used to receive about me.
Oh.
And complaints that he received about him. And the person didn't even know who they were talking to. So there's reality.
Yeah.
And then there's reality according to their lifespan.
Remember that guy who didn't buy a tractor at George's Equipment because of that bee in the front office? And Bill's like, oh, you mean my wife? Those were good times.
Oh, yeah.
Slightly, awesome. Slightly different venue, but same idea.
Yeah.
Well, but I think people have gotten kind of cynical about it. They're thinking, well, these kids are all missing because no one's really doing anything.
That's true. That's true. And we've, a law enforcement herd itself. You know, we used to have that stupid policy of wait for 24 hours. You know, the kid's just a runaway. That whole mentality is gone.
That's been gone for how long do you think? Because you do see.
I would say probably 20 years. 20 years ago, they were working on that really hard. I know in the Bay Area, we used to have it's just a runaway mentality. And the person we put into the National Registry as a missing persons, maybe next shift or something along that line.
Was this mostly teenagers or was this little kids?
Yeah, what's the age group for your cases? I mean, what's the limit? 18 or?
No, we'll go up to 21.
Oh, really?
If we have special issues, mostly 18, but if we have special issues, especially autistic children, we'll go up to 21 on that.
Oh, yeah.
But that doesn't mean we don't participate as an allied agency when somebody has a missing persons case that says, hey, I heard you guys can make a satellite fly over and take images of the earth, and we have a missing adult, then we'll certainly work with them on that. Mm. And that's one of those virtual things that we were talking about.
That's kind of handy. What about these signs on the freeway? You know, look for a red Honda, you know, missing child.
Oh, the Amber Alert.
Yeah, the Amber Alert. Thank you.
That comes from CHP in Sacramento.
Is that helpful?
I mean, it's very helpful.
You think it can't hurt, but do you get a whole, I mean, does it just ramp up the calls and maybe?
It's very helpful.
Okay.
Really, really helpful. And so what happens is instead of it going out to just law enforcement, that information goes out to the motoring public. So people who are driving see that and go, red Honda. We just passed the rest stop. There's a red Honda with a little girl in it. Maybe law enforcement needs to know this. And before the officer gets that call or that direction to go check on that car, he or she already knows that that car's out there, that that car's wanted.
Oh,
whether or
sure.
not they were on the freeway or not, right. they've already been told that.
Well, you had told me about one at a rest stop. We have like a couple minutes. You had told me about one at a rest stop that was, because, I mean, I figure things like this, it's good to know that law enforcement and experts are out there doing this, but let's face it, there's a lot more of us than there are of you.
Absolutely.
So I figure part of our mission today is like help us be like more helpful, you know, smarter.
Well,
so the rest stop lady was a great story.
I appreciate that. And this was a lady who, because of her work, would travel the same route every other day on Interstate 5. And because of her coffee addiction, she would have to stop at a certain rest stop each time. And she noticed that there was a particular car with a young girl in it and a male driving parked at the end where most people don't park because it's too far to walk to go to the restroom place. She noticed that, and she got the creeps, the feeling. You know what I mean? The hair on the back of your neck.
Yep.
And then the very next week, she noticed the same thing with a different child in the car.
Same car, same guy, same driver.
Notified law enforcement. Law enforcement acted on it and found that we had an exploitation issue. And in that case, that child had been traded off. So
wow,
yeah. So those people that think that we don't do anything about these cases are wrong. They may not hear about it. We may not be out there tooting our horn or telling people this is what's going on.
Like you said, though, a lot of times you don't want certain people to know you're looking at them, or you know, you don't want them to know you're working that case and you're waiting for a bigger lead.
Yeah, there's a bigger problem too, or associated problem, and that's you don't want to give family false hope.
Oh.
And so that cycle that these poor families go through is just gut-wrenching.
Yeah, that is that's just, I don't know. You get into all of those things and you can't walk away from it. We're going to talk more with our guest Paul Skinner. And you're listening to We the People. Find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
My name is Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. Pape is located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in the city of Shasta Lake, and they can fix you up with all your John Deere needs. Tractors, mowers, implements, parts service, they do it all up there. Go up and see them. Or give them a call. Their phone number is 530-226-9226. Or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
There you go.
There you are.
So we're here with our guest, Paul Skinner, who is our resident expert today on the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, on a topic that's been kind of on people's minds ever since the release of Sound of Freedom that was supposed to be a big nothing burger. They stalled that movie for 5 years. Can you imagine? I mean, when you heard about what the movie was about, and then you heard that people were blocking it from being shown, you thought, well, what a bunch of monsters. And then you watch the movie, and it's like, oh, wow, you're not going to outrun that.
No, pretty you're going to get some bad press.
I'm pretty
on
sure
that
you're going to pay for that in the afterlife. I wasn't really worried about the press. I was kind of worried about fire. Yeah, blocking a story like that. So talk to us about, like, you had mentioned foster care and some things like that. How does that factor into the missing and exploited kids venue?
Well, specifically with foster care, what we're finding is that with social media, a lot of these offenders will be contacting children that are in foster care and asking them to meet initially or asking them to run away. And so
asking them to run away?
Yes, and that they'll pick them up.
Oh, like, hey, do you want to run away? I'll give you a ride.
Exactly.
What?
Or, hey, would you like to make $1,000 tomorrow night?
Oh, that kind of running away.
And so that's happening to us across the U.S. And that's one of our focuses on Team Adam, is that once we hear these cases, we actually reach out to law enforcement and say, these are some resources we have. Let us give you a hand with that, or let us sit in the back of the room, or let us be at your beck and call. But this is a priority for us. We want to make sure this is stopped as quickly as possible. Because if you have a child that's in foster care and they're victimized over and over and over again, the likelihood of them returning to a normal atmosphere, especially a normal family atmosphere, is very, very rare. And they get lost. Mm. They get lost in the system.
Well,
now I will tell you
that
in Shasta County, Children's Protective Services and Juvenile Probation, very active, very assertive, very aggressive on keeping track of their foster children. And they call us as soon as one of those kids go missing or even go run away.
Oh, really?
Runaway. They call us immediately. And it's great to have that kind of working relationship. Mm-hmm. And so although my predominant function is to interact with law enforcement, I get after the official call is made, I get the unofficial call from that CPS worker or that probation worker saying, hey, Paul, you need to know. So-and-so is on the run again. It looks like her pimp or the guy that we still can't identify is back in the area.
Wow. Mm. And little kids who still are at home, with the advent of all of this, social media and a lot of younger kids having phones and access to stuff that sometimes their parents either don't monitor or don't understand. How much of that is there? There's a program that's out now where it's a group of people who pose as children. They surf the internet and pose. You know the one I mean?
I do.
I can't think of the name of it, but it's wow. I mean,
a sting operation.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing. They get these 20-somethings who look really young to dress up as a 14-year-old and go online and make a meet-up with somebody, and they snatch these people out of their shoes, which is fantastic. Is that a common thing, or is that just kind of a new wave of policing that's coming?
It's always been common to do sting operations for law enforcement. Whether it was illegal copper sales, that's always been very common for law enforcement. This part is very uncommon, and a lot of agencies are doing that. And again, we are fortunate. We live in a county where law enforcement is very aggressive on this and very active on that.
So I would imagine, like every other police agency, they're funding to really be as involved as they'd probably like to be is tough, isn't it?
That's true. When I interview other detectives from other departments, or I'm there for a deployment on a cold case, that's the one common theme I hear all the time is, gee, Paul, I would love to spend more time on this case, but I'm carrying a caseload of 65 violent crimes, and I've got this one missing from 2015 that's still there. But like I said earlier, I am so impressed at these detectives who, some of them were in grade school when the event occurred, but yet they know every intricate part of that investigation.
Oh, interesting. Well, so for hot tip for parents and grandparents, aunts, uncles, people who have kids in their life, what are they looking for? Like, what kind of, because I know,
or be on the lookout.
Like when I was when I was teaching, you know, there were all the attributes of at-risk kids.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these different things. What are things that people should be looking for? I mean, obviously, behavior changes, drug use, that kind of thing. But
those are all normal things. I think in the area of exploitation, they should be concerned about acquisition of new things. All of a sudden, something is new in the child's life. There is a PlayStation 20, whatever it is, that the parents didn't buy. There's a new jacket, a new coat, a new this, a new that, and the child is spending an abnormal amount of time on social media. They should be concerned about that. Because remember, exploitation is abuse, no doubt about it, but the difference between child abuse and child exploitation is that the child always receives something in exploitation that may be something that will benefit them psychologically of being praised. It may be a toy. It may be money. It may be this or it may be that. And you can imagine being a 17-year-old girl and being offered $1,000 a night to participate as a prostitute and have not only the opportunity but the means to get to where this is going to take place. That's something that, you know, people will consider, especially if they have never had $1,000.
I would imagine it doesn't start with that either. It's probably just we need you to, like you see.
Well, the whole grooming thing.
Yeah,
the whole grooming thing.
Yeah.
And I can't think of a better word than grooming, because that's exactly what happens. Yeah. It's incremental.
It's a ramp up.
It's a ramp up. It truly is a ramp up. But back to the other issue about the children. We have all these tools now from a technical standpoint that if I were a new parent, I would be considering Apple AirTags, those types of things, so I know where my child is all the time. I was at a conference the other day, and they were actually showing toys and a necklace that had Apple AirTag in it. And I thought, that's interesting.
Yeah, and it always amazes me when I hear people say, "Oh, well, you're violating their privacy when you look in their phone and you look in their computer." They didn't buy the phone, they didn't buy the computer, and I mean, let's be safe. I mean, that
it's,
to me,
it's kind of funny because I inherited stepkids when I was in my 20s, you know, so a lot of the parents were 10 to 15 years older than I was.
Mm-hmm.
And they were these, you know, at that time, super permissive. I mean, you know, nobody was worried about anything. Man, I'm rifling the backpack. I'm going through everything. And I remember being told, "You're violating their privacy." I'm like, "So the exact same thing you did. We would have been good parents, Bill." I said the exact same thing. Every single thing in that backpack I own. It's all my stuff, and I'm going to check it. And
well, do you remember growing up?
It's like,
are you afraid of doing certain things because the neighbor would get a hold of you first,
uh-huh.
And then when you got home, you'd be in trouble too.
Yep. Somebody makes a phone call.
Yeah, somebody makes a phone call, exactly.
Yeah. Somebody sees it.
Yep.
Well, you see a lot of this. Okay, so in the movies and on TV and stuff like that, you see these things portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
What are they missing? Or is most of it kind of accurate?
That's a really good question. I wish I had a really good answer.
Well, I just was curious because, you know, how a lot of times, like, they skip the really pivotal steps on how these kids wind up in these places, which is how really nice kids they're all nice kids, but how a kid that you would think, what? How did that take place? I mean, this kid wasn't, you know, living in a compromising situation. They just got off track. Drugs?
I think what they're missing is that it's usually portrayed as a big city phenomenon.
Oh,
and it's
that's
not.
A good point.
It's all across the U.S. and it's other countries, obviously, too. But it's not just a large city phenomenon. It is a human issue. And when you're dealing with the ambiguity of the human experience, you have all types of folks in that category.
Yeah.
And you and I may not be able to spot a pedophile, but they're out there. And so.
Yeah, my brother was a parole officer, and he worked sex crimes.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the things he told me about pedophiles blew my mind. The trained eye can pick them up. And it's amazing how many are out there just operating under the radar.
Well, it's like Aaron made the comment earlier about once you see it, you can never unsee it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I can guarantee you that the listeners today are going to drive by every rest stop on Interstate 5.
Yeah, and look at all the cars and look at all the kids.
They're going to be looking.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
unfortunately, that's what it takes. I mean, it's just need awareness. I mean, we talk about it all the time. When you get out of your car in a parking lot, look around, make sure there's nobody creeping on you, nobody, you know, doing things they shouldn't be doing to keep yourself safe. And I think we all need to keep an eye out for those types of things, because it's out there. It's out there, I think, a lot more than we think.
Yeah, you don't always know. In your, you know, kids going to school now have access to all sorts of things. How much of this is, in your estimation, connected to drug use, early drug use? And I don't mean like they're shooting heroin. I mean they're eating, you know, gummy bears or whatever, you know, and that whole industry that's moved in. We've legalized all of it. How has that affected this, or can you tell yet?
I don't know. I know that my counterparts at Children's Protective Services tell me that the majority of their clients came from drug experienced families. So when you have that type of upbringing, you're challenged right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So these poor kids, you know, some of them don't have a chance. I mean, I would imagine the biggest
threat is the internet. I mean, when they get online, they're a target. I don't care what social media platform they're on. I would imagine there's people out there cruising for them.
There are.
And making them a victim.
There are. Yeah. And you'd be surprised at the bait that's used. Everything from cartoons to Pokemon figures.
I don't get it. What? Cartoons.
So they'll have cartoons that they'll post and say, if you want a free cartoon every day, come back to my website each day. And that's all part of the grooming process.
Oh, I see. Then it goes to step
two. We obviously are terrible predators for like cartoons.
I'm glad you're a terrible predator.
Yeah, we have no future as predators. I would never think that, like, who's going to do that? Yeah. Wow, that is, that's creepy. And as a parent, how would you, did it have to pay for it, or is it, I'm assuming it's free, right?
Always free.
Always free. Okay. Always free. So they're not going to need their parents' credit card to do it. This is something they could just click on online. Is it stuff you can, if, you know how they have all these, I don't know, because, I mean, my kids were out of the house by the time we really had microwave ovens, so, you know, I'm really old. But if I had a kid in the house who was online, are there parental locks you can put on? You can't really block that.
There are some parental locks you can put on. I would, if I had a small child now, I wouldn't allow my child online unless I was there.
That's what I wondered. Is the easiest way to do it? Just no.
Yeah.
And they always say, well, I can't get a hold of them or whatever. Is that where those things in their backpack, you know, the tracker deals and all that, is that where that all kind of comes in?
It does.
So yeah. they can keep an eyeball on where they are.
I remember it wasn't that long ago where kids were not allowed to have cell phones at school.
Oh, yeah.
And now every kid has a cell phone in school because not only the kids want it for social media purposes, but the parents want it to be able to get a hold of their child and check on their child when it's a problem.
Well, that's helpful.
So yeah. It's hard.
Not so much.
Hard to not.
It's hard to challenge, yes.
Yeah.
Huh. Wow. Lots of things to consider here. All right. We have to take a really quick break again. Darn it. We'll be right back with our guest, Paul Skinner. You're listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Double wide quick stop, midnight tea top, Jack in her cherry coat town. Mama and daddy put their roots right here, cause this is where the car broke down. Yellow dog school bus, kicking up red bus, picking us up by a barbed wire fence. MTV on the RCA, no AC in the vents. We were Jesus, Sammy, blue jean baby, born in the USA. Trailer park, truck stop, faded little map dots, New York to L.A. We were teenagers. Front seat leaning, baby, come give me a kiss. Put me on the cover of the Rolling Stone, Uptown, Down Home, American Kid.
ocean meets the land. So I've been out here all night looking for your footprints in the sand. Did you hear the ocean singing? And baby, did you sing along while you danced out in the water to some old forgotten song? Or were you even here at all? Me, I've been looking for you, baby. I've been looking for you, baby.
So, we have a question for you. What's the, you ask it, Bill.
What, is there a statute of limitations when someone's hiding a child from a parent? That's kind of a tough one there, because
that is a tough one.
Yeah, we don't know.
So if they snag the kid when they're five, move to another place or whatever, and you.
So we're. I also got a caller who asked that question, and I shot it to you, Aaron. So
oh,
we're answering two questions in one right now.
Nars.
Yeah.
So if we're assuming that there is a violation of a court order. A court order is a court order. Court order stays and stands.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think is being asked. If it was a violation of a court order or a child was taken by a non-custodial parent.
Yeah, I would imagine there's no statute of limitations on that.
The offense is still occurring.
Right.
And so there'd be nothing like that.
Right.
If there's a question of parental rights or who's the parent versus who isn't the parent, and then they'd probably take that into family court to figure
out. Yeah, that's going
to
be a family court.
To sort it out.
Sure. Yeah.
Wow. How many – talk to me about the ones that wind up out of the country like we saw in the movie. I mean, those were kids kidnapped from one country, you know, and trafficked in another country, that sort of thing. But I'm kind of curious when they wind up taken someplace else or brought here – as we're looking at with this big open border thing, mm-hmm. How many of these kids are being snatched from Central America and being brought here? Because in the movie, it looked like it was a lot.
So I'll answer the question in a couple of different
ways. I didn't really
ways.
Want a number. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
I asked it and it gave me a number sort of way.
If the person that has the child is a non-custodial parent and they're in violation of court order and they're a governmental employee or in the military, they get snatched up. The kid gets snatched up and brought back to the U.S. immediately.
Mm.
NCIS and those groups, those military investigative groups, will grab them fast and quick and make it a very quick and done deal. And then they're brought back to answer charges for leaving the country with the child and violating a court order. As far as how many kids do we lose from the U.S. to other countries, I don't know.
Can't know. Right.
Anecdotally, from what I'm hearing from the experts and people that I interact with, we mostly, in our societal realm here, especially in the West Coast, the kids are kept on a local basis and kept locally and exploited and then unexploited, if that's a good enough term or not, to where they're used for a period of time. And then placed back into either a custodial situation or a foster home situation. And then they're reactivated again at a later time.
What?
And it's all based on monetary issues.
They're willing to pay.
Money's offered. Money's accepted. And then something happens and they change and then they try it again. So it's a secondary economy, obviously.
The
whole exploitation of children has its own economy attached to it. But again, our goal is to identify those offenders and make sure those offenders are placed in a secure location for a long, long time.
How do they control when people come across the border illegally? They have children. They don't have any documentation. They don't know if they're their kids or somebody else's kids or whatever. I mean, how do you control that? I mean, or even keep track of it?
I don't know that you do.
Yeah.
It's a situation that there's no win to, really,
mm-hmm.
unless we start back at the beginning and that's at the border and identifying children at the border.
Yeah. Yeah.
How can you even keep track? I mean, how do they know? They can't know if those people are their aunt or uncle or, I mean, they say that all the time. That, you know, they get like a free pass if they have a kid because they get to apply for asylum and families. So all you need is a child. Now we're a family.
Exactly. And even you have some cultures will claim parental rights. I ran into a culture recently where the missing child had five mothers.
What?
But only one birth mother.
Right.
But yet in that culture,
sure,
these other women were also considered the mother. And so the child was in the custody of mother number four, who didn't want to tell mother number one that she had the child because they were not getting along.
Yeah, so is that illegal?
So it gets down to the question of, is that illegal? And the answer is no, it's not illegal.
Yeah.
Is it a violation of family rights and common sense? Yes. But it was a cultural issue.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's a mess.
It was.
And so if you have kids who, if there are children who have come here who are being exploited, do they bring, I mean, I'm thinking you'd have to, it's sort of like if you're going to commit any kind of a crime and have a partner, because they're the partner in crime, unwilling, of course. But how much grooming do they have to do before you put a kid out in public? I mean, you couldn't let the kid go to school or anything. They would tell, right? Or do they not tell?
That's true. Most of these kids are not going to school, either by choice or the groomer has decided they're not going to go to school, period. And we've also changed our schools. There was a time where you could drive down the road and go, how come that kid's not in school?
Yeah, right.
Right.
And now we have all these alternative schedules, alternative schools. Alternative
so now it's
methods.
Kind of harder to spot. That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, there's no such thing as a truant officer.
There's no such yes.
My mother used to warn us about the truant officer all the time, and apparently they weren't even there when I was a kid.
I used to hear the same thing, and I was so fearful of the truant officer.
I know, and then it turns out they were gone in like the 1950s or something.
And I was a senior in high school. I'm looking over my shoulder.
Like every now
very
and then, my mom would like let us go downtown and have lunch with my dad. We could take the bus and go down to his office or whatever, and she's like, now, if anybody asks you, you have a dentist appointment. Like, we had this whole elaborate ruse for the truant officer that we never met because I guess there wasn't one. So if somebody is seeing a child in their neighborhood, for instance, who never seems to have anywhere to go, is that like they're around all hours and or they see them in the yard all the time? They're probably not walking the street, but they're probably they just don't ever see them.
Law enforcement needs to be
notified
of that. Absolutely.
You call CPS?
Now,
you call the, who do you call?
It doesn't matter. Everybody's mandatory reporters.
Oh.
So if you call CPS or law enforcement, they're mandatory reporters. You may not get a call back because information.
They're not going to call and tell you.
Yeah. Information that's gathered falls under the none your business type thing.
Yeah, sure.
But you may not get a call back.
But if they go there and they're like, hey, my kid's homeschooled and all that, then.
Yeah.
Does that make you a bad guy, or is it better to be safe than sorry? That's
better to be safe than sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Especially when it comes to kids, our most precious asset.
Exactly. Well, you know, I think everybody would like to be more proactive, but they don't know how. They look at it and it's like, I don't know anything about that. What are you looking for? Like, what's just the regular person looking at that they don't realize what they're looking at. Like the kid who's out in the yard all hours of the day and night, right? I mean, that's easy.
Yeah,
that's kind of a no-brainer.
That's certainly one. In neighborhoods where you know everybody,
yeah,
all of a sudden one house starts having people show up.
Oh.
Late at night for unexplained reasons, those types of things. CHP is fantastic at spotting these folks as they're moving the exploited children from place to place along
really?
The freeways. They're really good at it. They watch body language as they pass people. They take a look at the difference between the driver and the passenger. And if the driver's some old coot like me and the passenger is a 9-year-old girl, you know, just it takes a second look. Those are usually giveaways. But social media right now is really the investigative platform that law enforcement's using.
Interesting. Yeah. Are there nonprofits and other outside organizations that feed into that, like that show? Those people are all independent, but they partner with law enforcement. They
yes.
do all the cyber, you know, they spend all the, they do all the legwork.
Yeah, we partner with the Charlie Project and with the Poly Class Foundation on a lot of stuff, and we'll share information back and forth.
And what do those guys do? Are they research
basically,
people?
Basically the same thing we do, except their focus is on the family. and how to help the family out and helping the family reunification once the child is located. Mm-hmm. And we have a team called Team Hope that does the same thing, that will help the family out even long term once a child's been returned.
Interesting.
It's amazing.
You guys also have a thing,
Take it down. So what has happened is with the proliferation of cell phones and social media, a lot of children have posted pictures that are inappropriate on the internet. And we now have a system in place that we can pull those down from all sources. It takes cooperation by the child and by the child's parents. But it's a great program, and we're having some really good results in it. Because what children don't realize is once you post it, it's there forever.
Yeah, forever. So maybe you're 25 or you're 30 and you're trying to get a job. I think we spoke about this on the phone the other day. And you have somebody who's a grown-up now, you know, living life as a grown-up, and suddenly pictures appear from prior to 18. Mm-hmm. If it's prior to 18, regardless of the age currently, you guys will help them take it down.
Contact us. We'll help you take it down, yes.
That's fantastic. And
it's a great program. It took years in the making to get it developed to the point where now it's user-friendly. And so our team in Arlington, Virginia can just knock that thing out real fast. And
no kidding.
Basically, we call them, those of us in the field call them the zappers. They'll zap it and kill it, and then it's
gone.
No
fooling. Yeah. So if somebody is struggling with that, that is not something they, I mean, because you can't make, good Lord, I mean, I deal with campaign headquarters issues, right, locally. Mm-hmm. And so we're we're like vagabonds, right? So every election season, you pick a new spot. Oh, my God. There's always all these phone calls like, why aren't you guys on the corner of Hartnell and whatever? And it's like, that was like 5 years ago. But you can't get it out of the internet. You can't get it out of there once it's been Googled and whatever. So I can only imagine some photo out there. For heaven's sakes, you could chase that forever.
That's true.
And get nowhere.
And our challenge is hard drives. Honestly, once somebody downloads it, they can repost it. So it's a good first step. They are constantly researching other ways to help out these poor victims.
To block it.
On this kind of thing, yeah.
And so the address that I have here is takeitdown.ncmec, so necmec.org.
Netmec.org, yes.
But they can go to missingkids.org, and it's one of the...
It
one
is.
One of the features in there.
It's one of the features.
Take it down.
There's a great feature on there right now for your listeners on a story of a young man who was brought into sexual extortion world as a runaway. And it is a phenomenal story. So if your listeners get a chance, take a look at missingkids.org and read his story. It's the first story that pops up.
Oh, no kidding. And so give us the spoiler alert version.
I'm not going to.
Oh, okay.
Nice try, Aaron.
You gotta go read it.
Come on, Aaron. Give us the spoiler. Okay, so then, CSAM. That's what they talk about all the time on that show. The people that are basically outing the predators. Child sexual abuse material. But you guys have a whole thing in here about reporting it. And about, there's a long list of resources for kids that have been exposed to sexual material. And I didn't read the whole thing, but online, anywhere?
Online. Uh-huh. And so CSAM comes in two forms. It comes in the form of images and also comes in the form of recordings.
Oh.
Videos. And so we'll help if they're involved in something like that or unfortunately got forced into something like that, we'll help them get that taken down.
I would imagine that's a busy place.
They are very busy.
So, best way for people to find you guys is missingkids.org and just go through all of the resources.
It is.
And I would imagine people are kind of surprised that this is out there. Like, I had no idea. I figured if you had pictures that you had put out there years ago and they came back at you, you're on your own. I mean, you could go to the police department, but they can't really do anything for you.
No, they can't.
Is it a crime?
No. If it was voluntary, no.
No kidding. So, like, bad boyfriend experience, bad girlfriend experience?
If it's child porn, obviously,
then that's a problem.
Yeah, that's a big problem. So, your comment about not many people know about NCMEC, We are fortunate, unfortunate in California. We're fortunate in that California Department of Justice is such an aggressive organization when it comes to the identification of missing and unidentified persons. And so law enforcement traditionally goes to California DOJ for assistance on these types of cases. And then under the mutual aid pact that we have in California, other agencies will come and assist when it's necessary. Keep in mind, though, that, like I said, the average police department is 25 people or less.
Mm-hmm.
Most police departments here in California are more than that. So we have ample manpower most of the time on that type of stuff. So not many people hear about us and know about us. The investigators all know about us because we also teach in the classes that they attend, talk about our resources that we have available. So we're not that well known in California. We are very well known in the Midwest, very well known in the East Coast. In California, there are five of us in the entire state.
Wow.
So.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you said your organization is federally funded?
Yes.
Okay. And what are the limitations as far as your funding goes? What does that funding go towards? In other words, what can you spend it on?
Well, obviously, it goes towards salary of the employees. We've got several different divisions. We've got a case analyst, analysis division. We've got the research division, the facial recognition or facial reconstruction division, age progression. We've got case managers. So it's a staff. Yeah.
Right.
And then, of course, we only get paid, those of us in Team Adam, we only get paid if there's a deployment.
Right.
So we're kind of, it's kind of difficult to take a look at what our budget is versus what it should be and what it really is.
Sure.
Because we may have five jump off cases in a week where we've deployed five Team Adam people to each case. Or we may have a land search, a dump search that's taking 14 days that we have to have somebody at along with local law enforcement. So.
Totally depends on the case.
It totally depends on the case. It totally depends on the information. It totally depends on how far law enforcement wants to go with the resources that we can provide.
Mm-hmm. When we come back, I'm curious about partnerships outside the country that you guys have.
Like, okay.
That was one thing that was kind of an eye-opener in Sound of Freedom. You looked at that, and it's like, wow, there's a pretty good network out there. So
there is.
I'm imagining you guys tap into that as well. Our discussion today is on missing and exploited children. You can find all their information at missingkids.org. And if you forget that, you can always find us and the archive of the show, too, after the fact. Share it with other folks at wethepeopleradio.us.
What you gonna do? What you gonna do when they come for you? Bad boys, what you gonna do?
That song too.
I know.
It was kind of like great for you guys.
Who is it? Kelly Clarkson. No.
No, McBride.
Martina
McBride.
Yep.
Oh wow.
Yeah, it was kind of the whole story whole song was like your whole deal.
Oh wow.
It was your whole thing.
What
so okay, forget the out of the country thing. We'll do that if we have time.
Okay.
I forgot about the spatial thing. Because I don't know anything about it.
Ah, okay.
It was easy for me to forget.
Well,
but it was interesting.
Bill alluded to it at the beginning, and one of the things that we're able to do, Team Adam members, we're able to look at some of these abductions or suspected abductions or runaway exploited children situations, and look at it from a spatial crime position. And really, what that is just identify what favorable factors existed for that crime to occur. And in looking at that, when you think about something very simplistic, here's an example. My wife and I recently went to a grocery store, and we got out of the car, and as we did, a man was pulling up next to us in a pickup truck, and in the back he had landscape equipment. Hard-working man. You could look at him and tell he had the heat, everything else. He was done for the day. And as we're leaving, another truck pulls up, and two guys jump out and grab his weed eater and throw it in the back of their truck, and they take off.
Nice.
Okay, so why did that crime occur? And so one of the things we offer to law enforcement is we'll come in and take a look at the case that they're working and say, okay, from a spatial situation, why did that situation occur? Well, it occurred because of a formula. And the formula is we had a likely offender in the area, one. Two, there's a suitable target. Three, there's no capable guardian in place. There's nobody watching that child or that situation. And so then we wind up with a crime of opportunity. And so the average person I talk to says, oh, my God, we have, of all the children missing, we have 92% of those were kidnapped or abducted. And that's not true. It's less than 1% of all the children that go missing.
Oh, wow.
But that 1% is too many.
Well, sure.
Out of that 1%, is that a crime of opportunity, or is it something that was pre-planned?
That's where the discussions take place at the investigative phase. So that's one of the jobs of the investigators, to sit down and say, okay, what's our hypothesis here? Is this a crime of opportunity, or is this a planned event? Either way, where was the capable guardian? Mm-hmm. You know, why didn't we have a measure, a someone, a fence, a gate, a person, a parent? You know, why weren't they involved, or were they involved? And so it works into this huge matrix that has to be considered and worked through from beginning to end before you know where your investigation is really going to go. And so one of the things that we offer, one of the services that we offer, is a sit-down conversation with those investigators, especially on those old cases. And let's draw this thing out, and let's take a good look at this and see what's going on. And I can give you an example if you'd like.
Yeah.
Of that. Okay. So
I love examples.
2 weeks ago, I was down in the Central Valley area on an old case where a 16-year-old female went missing. She went missing because she and her boyfriend, who was 24 at the time and a convicted pimp, had a fight at a party at a house, and she was going to walk to a friend's home. Now, those facts by themselves are bad enough, but if there's any thought process to make those facts benign, you have to understand that the friend's house was 24 miles away.
Oh.
So your brain starts going, well, wait a minute, time out. She's going to walk 24 miles because she and her boyfriend got into a fight. And as we're going through this investigation, we realize that her boyfriend's brother had made some comments during the investigation that were completely off track and provable wrong. And then we found a third party during that initial investigation that was so concerned about being a part of the investigation that was way out of track and way out of whack. And so then we wind up with a situation of, okay, do we have a likely offender? Yeah. Do we have a suitable target? Yes. Does he have the motive, opportunity, and means? Yes. Where is she? She hasn't got a driver's license. She hasn't worked any place. She doesn't exist, according to anything. So where is she? And so once we work through that whole process with the investigative team, they came up with the idea we need to go back to the point where she was seen and check that place.
Oh.
It had been checked before, but check using new technology. So that's what I was referring to when we're talking about spatial relationships. That offender, victim, and the absence of a guardian.
Put all those pieces together, and somewhere in that zone is the answer.
Yes.
Which really makes you think about, I mean, when we were kids, walking down the sidewalk, walking a mile to a friend's house or whatever, it was no big deal. But in today's world, somebody underage walking down the sidewalk alone could get snatched off the street so easily. And why do you think it's more prevalent now, or is it more prevalent now?
I don't know. I know we're reporting on it
right.
a lot. We're certainly taking it very serious from a criminal justice standpoint, that's for sure. I don't know if it's gotten worse or not. I do know that it ruins lives immediately.
You would think in an era where we have so many cameras and there's so much technology to watch where everyone is moving, you would think that would be incredibly risky.
It is. It is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do they get caught with technology?
They do. We just did.
Really?
We just did.
Yeah. I think that would be like the Ring doorbell cameras, all that stuff.
We just did in Shasta County.
Oh, really?
A unknown person had a nickname, but through my resources, we couldn't find out who he was. We had a picture of him. We couldn't find out who he was through the picture. He was preying on foster children. And we still couldn't find out who he was.
Wow. How did he know they were foster children?
He contacted him through social media.
Oh, the old social media thing. Okay.
And we finally, and this is with an investigative team here in Shasta County, which was amazing, we finally get another victim who identifies him by his vehicle. And law enforcement did a deep dive, because when somebody says to you, "It's a dark-colored car, and I think it's this or I think it's that," That's a bad search. That's going to be tough.
A lot of ground.
These investigators did a deep dive, identified a vehicle that they thought might be it, started looking at this particular person, doesn't live in Shasta County, has no business in Shasta County, has no relationships in Shasta County, and yet we have him in Shasta County on the nights of the events.
Oh.
Caught on license plate readers.
Yeah.
So when he, when his world got shook a couple of weeks ago, when they showed up at his work and grabbed him.
Wait, now where did he work? Far away?
In West Sacramento.
Okay, so a couple hours.
Yeah. So technology's helped us a lot.
We have license plate readers in Reading area?
Yes.
Really?
Also, we have all
was he offending and only like Shasta County, or was he offending in other counties and cities, or just Reading, and why Reading, if you can talk about that?
I think it was just Shasta County.
Weird.
No kidding. Well, and any tie to this county? Like, why would he have come up here?
There was a tie about 20, 30 years ago at one point.
No kidding.
But nothing else.
Well, another thing with these offenders is, what do they say? For every one time they get caught, they've offended 100 times and not get caught.
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah.
So back to your comment about the technology. It's estimated that 300 times a day you're caught on some type of video surveillance, ring surveillance.
Wow.
Someone's private video camera.
Right?
Yeah. And so as soon as they have an incident like this, one of the very first things I should mention to you about the CART team.
Child abduction
response team.
Yeah.
In Northern California, we have a CART team, which is amazing. They are a certified CART team made up of California Highway Patrol, FBI, Red Bluff PD, Anderson PD, Reading PD, Shasta County Sheriff's Department. They are phenomenal. But they will send a group out to do nothing but locate those types of devices that could have picked up this information.
Mm.
And so the amount of information that's provided is just absolutely amazing that they can get. And it comes from sources that you wouldn't even expect.
Yeah. Yeah, because there are a lot of cameras, but you've got to go look for them.
You do. And I was recently down in Ripon, which is down by the Modesto area. And they have a city ordinance that if you're coming into Ripon to establish a business and you're going to have a security system, that the police department have access to your hard drive.
Oh.
And so they're getting information very, very quickly.
So they don't have to wait and blah, 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 do all
the search warrants. You know, if somebody's not willing to provide the information, you have to write a search warrant and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of interesting. People are really getting on board with this. And then, of course, you've seen everything with the Ring doorbells. It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, you saw the white car. You know, I mean, we've all seen the programs, right, where, you know, the white car went by, then all of a sudden the white car was picked up. So it could have gone right or left. Well, so you go to the next camera, right or left. So which way did they go and what time was it? And
Think about this. Your car may have recorded people standing next to your car.
Oh.
Really?
My car, if somebody touches my car, it starts rolling video. Just recently they asked, I can't remember where it was. I think it was Portland, Oregon. I don't know where it was. They asked everybody with a Tesla who had driven by a particular intersection during this time period to contact the police department because their car probably captured.
Because their car takes video while they're driving?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Like by itself?
It was a particular model.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that had... Oh.
Isn't that amazing?
It is.
Kind of creepy.
It is.
And you know what? It wasn't Portland. It was Bend, Oregon. It was Bend, Oregon, where a lady was killed and her car was dumped in Klamath Falls. And so Bend, Oregon investigators were asking anybody with a Tesla in that area.
No kidding.
It's like a rolling surveillance.
Yeah, I was just going to say.
And it's all done not for that purpose. It's all done for the comfort of the driver.
Right.
But we're seeing more and more things like that that are just amazing.
A lot of dash cams. A lot of people are running dash cams.
Yes.
You know, criminals have always been dumb, you know, in a lot of cases. They get away with a lot.
Thank you.
But you know, every now and then you watch stuff and you think, oh, for heaven's sakes. You know what I mean? Like, you walk into a mini mart and you're going to hold them up and you're thinking, really?
And you're looking at the camera.
You're looking right at the camera. Like, how dumb are you? But now, you couldn't even really keep yourself out of video footage.
That's true. You can't. Mm-mm. Have you seen the video of the man and the girl walking into the grocery store, and she looks up at the camera and she goes,
the hand sign.
Help me. That's being taught to children in school.
And they saved her.
Because it's their thumb is folded into their palm, and the four fingers are up, and then they fold the four fingers down like they're kind of waving.
Right.
But not really.
Right. It's basically a sign language type thing.
Yeah, what is it?
HM, help me.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah. And so those types of things.
Since we're on radio, I'm like, I'm doing this. I just want everyone to know I'm doing this right in front of the microphone so you can see it.
So you can see it.
Very helpful.
It was super helpful. So
I think one thing I want to make sure that the listening audience knows, in Northern California, we are prepared to handle these cases. In Northern California, we are fortunate. We have got some law enforcement managers, chiefs of police and captains and lieutenants that place this issue as number one issue on the plate. So I am impressed.
That's awesome to know. So let's say you live in wherever and you're thinking, I don't know if our guys are, you know, up to speed on that.
They are.
And so let's say they go and they ask and they go, well, we could use a lot more help. They can contact NCMEC. Maybe, and get a little more assistance in putting their...
You're talking about the law enforcement organizations?
Yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
You live in kind of Nowheresville, and you're thinking we need some help?
Yeah, and we'll tell them what services we can provide them.
That's kind of great.
And, of course, you know, we have the one thing that most law enforcement administrators love to hear is that no cost.
I was going
to
say, free. Yeah. We're going to have a guy on here in the next few weeks from Department of Homeland Security who's with CISA. Cyber, what do you want to call it, blah, blah, blah.
Security, yes.
And they actually consult for free with private businesses, church groups, anybody for on-site physical security and also cyber. Just pretty interesting, and I didn't know they were doing that.
That's great.
So we'll be promoting that here pretty soon. Mm-hmm. So I guess we have to go because Liam's flashing the light at us. Holy cow. I told you we could burn 2 hours. No sweat. Our guest has been Paul Skinner with the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and we thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
last for good.